Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
A new book by NC State economist Dr. Mike Walden takes a look at the explosive growth predicted for North Carolina in the next 30 years and finds big challenges and opportunities. The growth will be dramatically uneven, with many places in the state losing population as traditional jobs disappear. Walden joins us now to talk about it. Well, thanks for being with us on News and Views. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, Chris.
So what made you ask the question about what our economy will look like in 2050?
Well, I did a book about 10 years ago which described how the state economy had changed from textiles, apparel, furniture, our traditional 20th century economic sectors, to what it was then and essentially still is now: technology, medical industry, finance, et cetera. So this book, I wanted to look ahead, sort of carry that theme of how the economy is changing in the state and how it affects everything, and carry that forward, and thought, well, I want to look far enough ahead that people view it as the future, but not too far ahead that we, if there are some issues, we can't do something about that. That's a serious reason I chose 2050. The joking reason is that I'll be 99 then, likely won't be around. So if my forecasts are wrong, I won't care.
Well, obviously, there's a ton of things to talk about. We can only cover a few of them today. But one of the lead things a lot of people talk about is how fast we're growing.
Yes.
Which has a dramatic impact. It is stunning how many people are going to be living here in not too many years.
I project we're about 10.2 million people now. I project 13.4 million at mid-century. That's actually a slowdown in our rate of growth. But the interesting part of that is, why are we growing? Do we have larger families? No.
Right.
It's mainly people moving here from other states. I'm an in-migrant. My wife's an in-migrant. You look at NC State, you ask five people, four of them are from other states. So we have been an attractive place for people to move, seeking jobs, retirees coming here. Interesting point that I make in the book: if global warming is real and if it continues and we heat up, but the northern states heat up and they become more livable in the winter, for example, that could slow down. So these are all tentative forecasts, but 13.4 million people is what I put it at 2050.
And there's so many demographic things about that. One of them is the age
that
people will be in North Carolina, which, you know, you hear some sociologists have talked about it, economists have talked about it, but I'm not sure it's really sunk in yet to policymakers.
Yeah, 13% of North Carolinians were 65 and over in 2010. I'm now in that group. I project by 2050 over 21%. When I speak to business groups, one of the things I tell them, if you don't have part of your business plan reaching that growing demographic group, you need to get on that. So that's going to affect, for example, I think a lot of jobs are going to be in companies and businesses and sectors that service that demographic. Fortunately, my generation, which is aging, is more active than our previous cohorts, counterparts. But that's going to be a big, big impact on the state economy, definitely.
Jobs, you mentioned jobs already. The biggest change might be where people work. You've mentioned the transition that we've made from traditional industries, but there's another transition coming, it sounds like.
Well, one of the big questions there is, will there be work? Just last week, an MIT study was released that projects that 50% of the occupations we have today won't be around. 50% will not be around in mid-century. And I obviously too late for me to cite that in the book, but I have other sites that quote the same thing. So the big question is that going to happen, number one? Number two, where will the new jobs be? And number three, the impact this could have, for example, on my industry, higher education. Just think about it. If you were a person who trained for a particular occupation, you worked in that 10, 15, 20 years, you're in your 40s, and bam-o, that occupation has been automated or taken over by technology, you got to get retrained. So one of the things, I just spoke to the My Future NC Commission that was just set up and said that at higher education levels, we need to be ready in future years for a major influx of older students who need to change their occupations.
Where do you think those occupations will be? You mentioned some will be in the healthcare services, but what else will we be doing?
Well, I think technology clearly is going to continue to expand. Yes, I think medical services, I think tourism, I think occupations involved with the international trade and international relations. And I know there's been a pushback against that, but I think the forces for more linkages to foreign countries are too strong. One of the things I tell my undergraduate majors is, don't slough off that foreign language requirement. That could be a big door opener for you. And then, interestingly, I think food production, people don't think, I mean, we've gotten so technologically oriented. North Carolina is a big food producer, particularly meat. That's been a big shift in and of itself, out of crops in the meat. The world, as it becomes richer, is eating more meat. So I think there's some opportunities there, not necessarily at the farm level, but at the supply chain level.
What about the way the state is going to grow and where those jobs are going to be? We continue to see the trend of the Triangle, Charlotte, some in the Triad. People are moving there from out of the state and from inside North Carolina.
That's right. I predict that by 2050, a third, 33 out of our 100 counties, will have decreased in population. And you're absolutely right. The metro areas have been growing, will continue to grow. North Carolina, I think since the mid-90s, has been considered an urban state. It used to be, I came in the late 70s, we were a rural state. The safe bet is that's going to continue. Now, this is where technology can change things. For example, what if virtualization, which allows you to be here but actually somewhere else and have all those same sensory perceptions, what if that is really perfected? What if drone delivery is perfected? What if you can get your medical services via sensors on your body that you don't have to go see a doctor? That could open up rural areas for people who want to have more elbow room in where they live. So again, the safe bet is those urban regions are going to continue to grow and expand, but technology could shift that.
How do you think we'll be doing compared to other states around us? I mean, I know you don't have a crystal ball, but North Carolina is not unique in these things you're describing.
That's right. I think we'll do reasonably well. I mean, if you look at the data over long periods of time, we've been a leader here in the Southeast. I think the Southeast is still attractive. I have relatives who are retiring in Ohio and they're moving south. But again, I think that's where the issues related to climate change. For example, we could have 10 to 15 counties on the coast essentially become underwater counties if the sea level rises a foot or two, which some people are predicting. I already mentioned the heating up. Already our summers seem to be getting hotter, and if that becomes even hotter, yet a state like Minnesota has warmer winters that are tolerable, we could see, again, a shift out of people moving to the south, southeast, and stay in those northern states. So this is where I think those parts are interconnected, and we need to be aware of those interconnections.
And some of those things we can't do anything about. We have to figure out how to react to. But on the state level, what can policymakers do to get ready for these things?
Well, I think education is the big one, job training, because I do think even though maybe 50% of the occupations won't go away, I think a sizable number will. So I think we need to be aware, first of all, at that level, we need to be aware of the changes, we need to monitor the changes, and at the university and community college level, we need to be ready to move resources around. And one thing I really want to hit on, Chris, is I don't mean to imply that the humanities are going away. In fact, there is now, I think, an increasing realization, and you talk to businessmen and you hear businesswomen, you hear this, that people trained in the humanities are oftentimes what's missing in companies, because we have these very smart people trained in technology, but they don't know how to interrelate to people. So I don't want to downplay the humanities. Nothing I'm saying here would imply that those are going away. But I do think that at the university level, we need to be aware of how occupations are changing, be ready to redeploy resources.
How does the tax and regulatory structure fit into this new world we'll be facing?
I think it makes it tough on the regulatory structure because there's so much in flux. And of course, you know, as someone who studied state government for a long time, once you put something in the bureaucracy, it's very, very hard to change. So I think we need to always be aware when we're setting up rules and regulations that they may make sense now, but they may not make sense in the future. In terms of taxes, one of the things I do in the book is propose two different tax systems that are very flexible. I think one of the things that is going to be different in the future is how people earn money. May not be the way we earn it now. And so if you have a tax system that doesn't take that into account, that could deplete the state resources. And then last thing to say is transportation, how we fund transportation. That, I think, is going to be our most immediate challenge because people are moving to non-internal combustion engines, so they're not using much gasoline. Mileage is going up, and forecasts are that our state gasoline fund is going to be depleted. We're going to have to make some major changes there.
But there's a sense of optimism in your outlook.
Well, optimism in the sense that I've been here 40 years. I love North Carolina. I think it's a very unique state. I think it's a state that has a lot to offer. We do face challenges. I think the message of my book is that we need to try to extent possible to know where the state is going based on these big trends that we can't control, as you rightly said. Yet if we know what those trends are and where they might be leading us and we don't like some of the outcomes, we can take some policy changes and other changes now to affect that.
Well, it's fascinating. Thanks for writing this book, and I hope folks will pick it up and read it. Thanks for being with us.
Excellent. Thank you, Chris.
That's it for another edition of News and Views. Look for us on the web at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Hinkle, this is Chris Fitzsimon. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon, director of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com. News and Views, a weekly look at state and policy issues, is a production of the North Carolina Justice Center.